You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Nothing conjures up childhood memories of long, warm summer evenings like fireflies. I remember when I was probably about 7 years old, catching them and putting them in jars to make lanterns, and then putting them in the fridge overnight to see if they would wake up the next day. I may have even squished a few in an effort to find out how they made their light. Well, my next guest, Sarah Lewis, has made a career out of studying fireflies. She's even written a book about them. It's called Silent Sparks: The Wondrous World of Fireflies. She's a professor of evolutionary and behavioral ecology at Tufts University, and she joins me now in our Woods Hole studio. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
What gave you this awesome idea that you could actually make a career out of studying fireflies?
I didn't start out studying fireflies. In fact, I was a graduate. A lot of people have stories like yours of growing up and falling in love with fireflies when they were kids. I have absolutely no memory of fireflies as a child.
Really?
But the first time I noticed fireflies, I was a graduate student at Duke, and I was sitting out in my backyard one evening with my dog, and we were supposed to be in charge of mowing the lawn, and we didn't always mow it. And so there was rather long grass in our backyard. And as it got dark, this cloud of silent sparks rose up around us. And I'd never seen anything like it. And I was completely blown away. It took me about 3.5 years to come back to answering all the questions that popped into my mind.
So you weren't a kid, but you still had that childlike wonder when you encountered them, all those questions about...
Absolutely. How do they make light?
Do we know now?
We do. And what are they doing with all those flashing things? What are they talking about? Who are they talking to? What are they saying? And what happens after the lights go out? So many questions about fireflies.
So what are the answers?
Well, what would you like to know?
Let's start with how they make the light.
So, you know, we've learned a lot about fireflies in last 3 or 4 decades. We've learned a lot about firefly biochemistry, their physiology. My own work has really focused on studying firefly behavior and firefly ecology. And we've learned a tremendous amount. And more recently, I've gotten interested in firefly conservation. And we've learned a lot about basic biology of fireflies that can now inform what we do in terms of firefly conservation.
So let's go back to some of the basics. It's bioluminescence is how they make that light. But why? As you said, what are they saying to each other?
The thing that most of us think about when we think about fireflies is, in fact, those sparks in the night. Those are adult fireflies that are actually looking for mates. They're mostly males that are flying around. And what we're seeing when we see a field full of fireflies is basically we are looking at the silent love songs of male fireflies.
That's very romantic.
It's very, very romantic. But we've also learned in just the past couple of decades that that's not how firefly light originated. So all fireflies light up as juveniles, but not all adult fireflies light up. Hmm. So it looks like the evolution of bioluminescence in this particular beetle family started with an innovation, an invention of light-making talent by the juvenile firefly, the common ancestor of all fireflies. And that juvenile figured out a way to make an enzyme. We now call it luciferase, which is Latin for light bearer. And it was such a cool invention that every descendant of that common ancestor in its juvenile form can make light, even though not all firefly adults light up.
Why do the juveniles light up?
Yeah, so that was a big mystery. Like, why should juveniles? They're way too young to be looking for love, right? So what's the point of being so conspicuous in making all that light? And we think that juvenile fireflies actually produce toxins that make them poisonous and repellent to predators. And so we think that bioluminescence in fireflies first evolved as a warning. It's
like a red color, like bright coloration in some plants or animals.
Okay. Yeah, they're nocturnal hunters, and so at night, bright colors wouldn't be very useful. But bioluminescence is like a neon sign. It kind of shouts out in the dark, "I'm toxic, stay away," to any would-be predators that are out there looking hungry and looking for something good to eat.
I guess it worked because we have fireflies, but it seems like kind of a dangerous gamble because you're lighting yourself up in the night to be eaten as well.
Yeah, so that kind of warning coloration has evolved in many different forms across the animal kingdom. In marine systems, actually, most bioluminescence is really a warning, either a warning or a lure. There's actually very, very few examples where they use light as a courtship signal, and those are some bioluminescent, really cool bioluminescent ostracods that are like the fireflies of the sea. But in most cases, it's a defensive warning signal to predators or a distraction.
You mentioned that most of the fireflies that we're used to seeing are these adult males who are flashing. Why don't we see the juveniles that are always lit up? And for that matter, we only see fireflies during the summer. Where are they the rest of the time?
The majority of the firefly life cycle happens underground. So firefly females lay their eggs in moist places like moss or moist soil, and the eggs hatch out after 2 to 3 weeks into tiny carnivorous larvae that live underground and eat a variety of things, earthworms, snails, soft-bodied insects.
They're big enough to eat an earthworm.
They are voracious predators. They're tiny, but they kind of gang up on earthworms, and they have sharp, sickle-shaped jaws that they use to bite their prey, and they inject their prey with paralyzing neurotoxins.
Wow.
Then they secrete digestive enzymes, basically liquefying the prey and slurping it up. It's kind of like an earthworm smoothie. And they spend 2 years underground. Most people never see firefly larvae.
And I think I'm glad that I haven't seen or encountered a firefly larvae at this point.
They are a little scary. It's kind of like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing because they have this backstory that's crazy, voracious, carnivorous beast that's really different from the sort of peaceful, quiet, ethereal adults that we typically think of when we think of fireflies.
I'm talking with firefly researcher Sarah Lewis of Tufts University. Again, going back to childhood memories, I feel like there were fields full of fireflies, and now if I see a handful in my backyard, I feel like it's been an amazing night, and I don't know if that's just exaggeration of childhood memories or living in a different place, or have the number of fireflies actually declined over the past 30 or so years?
I think all these things are true. Many, many people report that there really aren't as many fireflies around as they remember when they were growing up. One reason for that is that people don't spend so much time outdoors as they used to. So it's possible that maybe they're there and we just don't see them. But firefly experts who do go out looking for fireflies in places where there used to be also agree that many places around the world, this is true, firefly populations are struggling. The main culprit for this is habitat loss. So the fields, the forests in Southeast Asia, the mangroves where fireflies thrive, are giving way to development, to urbanization. Another problem for fireflies is light pollution. So if you look at maps of the light that's emitted across the world at night, it's increased exponentially in just the past couple of decades. And this is a big problem for many nocturnal organisms, but especially for fireflies, because this light interferes with the signals, the bioluminescent signals, that fireflies use to find their mates.
So I'm guessing my backyard is not ideal habitat. You were mentioning, you know, your first story, the fact that you didn't mow your lawn much. Do they need the long grass? I mean, if we all just turned off our back porch lights, would our backyards be decent habitat?
Yeah. So in my book, Silent Sparks, I do actually have many suggestions for how you can provide better habitat for local fireflies for both the larval stage, very important, and the adult stage. And so the probably the most important thing is having some kind of moisture, some moist conditions. So letting your lawn grow longer helps firefly larvae because longer grass can hold more moisture in its roots. The soil doesn't dry out as quickly, and so it's better larval habitat. Many firefly larvae thrive in sort of woody debris, so it's a good idea if you can keep in your yard some corners that are, you know, let some leaf litter accumulate and some sort of decaying logs, some woody debris. That's the kind of place that firefly larvae really like to hang out. So it's not just about making a great habitat for the display for courtship activities of the adult fireflies, but also promoting, well, for example, earthworms and the kind of habitat that firefly larvae like to live in.
We hear a lot about the decline of bees, and you've said that we do think numbers of fireflies have gone down. Is it that dramatic? Should we be worried about the future of fireflies?
Well, that's a great question, Heather. And one of the problems is that we don't yet have hard data. It's not like the Christmas bird count, for example, where there's lots of people who are interested in birds and go out year after year after year and count fireflies. And so one of the things that we've been working on recently is we've partnered with Mass Audubon to relaunch a citizen science project called Firefly Watch. And Firefly Watch is aimed at gathering together people all over the country to go out at night into their backyard and just commit to counting fireflies that are either there or not there in their backyard, maybe just once a week over the course of the summer, and reporting that data online. And we're hoping to be able to collect long-term data then that would allow us to track population sizes of fireflies, really to see whether or not they're declining. The Boston Museum of Science has data starting from 2006 on firefly abundance, and Mass Audubon has just picked up this project and is bringing it forward. So you can check out their website, Firefly Watch at Mass Audubon.
I am totally sold. Sarah Lewis is a professor of evolutionary and behavioral ecology at Tufts University, author of Silent Sparks, The Wondrous World of Fireflies. She also has a TED Talk that you should check out called The Loves and Lies of Fireflies. Sarah, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up after the break, we've got a summer reading list, Living Lab Radio style. Stay tuned.